May it please the court, counsel. I am Matt Tanner, counsel for appellant Derek Young. I think we can look at today's case as a series of questions about waiver because I don't want to overlook the motion that's been brought by the government. So one question is, did Derek Young waive his right to appeal the denial of his motion to suppress? The second question is, did Derek Young, by entering into a parole agreement with the state of Illinois, waive or surrender virtually any and every expectation of privacy? And a final question, I think, is whether the government waived the ability to raise the argument that it raises in its brief on the merits, which is to try to justify this arrest under every reason except for the one that we know to be the real one.
But honestly, you know, waiver to one side, and I do think you have a problem with the lack of any reservation in writing after the plea or any signal to the district court during the plea colloquy or anything. I think you have a problem if you just got to the merits, because he does commit the traffic offense, he gets out of the car, and then he zooms off, at which point the marijuana falls out of his pocket and the jig's up at that point. I mean, he can certainly be searched based on the probable cause. So taking each step along the way, I'm not sure where Sampson really even comes into his case. There might be a case where Sampson would be interesting, but I'm not sure it really is terribly pertinent for him.
Well, I think the reason it's pertinent, Your Honor, is that without the officer's determination that this person was a parolee and thus subject to search with no warrant, no cause, no nothing, just because he's a parolee, he never would have ordered him to get out of the car.
Well, I don't know. I mean, under Atwater, the officer was entitled to order him out of the car.
I think he was entitled to do a lot of things, at least arguably under these circumstances.
But we look only at objective actions, what was inside the officer's head, like, he's a parolee, or, you know, I just don't like people who commit traffic offenses. I'm a fanatic about right-hand turn signaling, or, you know,
well, I know we don't look inside the officer's heads in terms of analyzing, you know, was somebody genuinely frightened for his safety, for a Terry stop. But this is different. This is an officer who testifies very clearly. Obviously, it's a minor traffic infraction. I think Mr. Young denies that he committed it, but whatever. I think we can assume that he failed to signal his turn. The officer stops him, calls in his name, discovers that he's a parolee, and then his testimony is quite clear. I've been trained. If somebody's on parole, I'm entitled to search them in the car that they're in. And that's the only explanation.
But isn't that just overdetermined? I mean, he can ask him anyway to get out of the car. So, yes, subjectively he has a second reason in mind, but why does that matter?
Because it was the only real reason.
Well, but unfortunately, by some of us, under Wren, et cetera, and Atwater, and so on, real reasons don't make too much difference, do they?
I think this is different from a Terry situation where we're not going to look inside an officer's head to try to understand what his subjective perceptions were of a danger or of suspicion or something along those lines. We look to a reasonable officer and whether one might have concluded that there was that there was
look, he consented to be searched. That's part of the conditions of parole in Illinois. Why isn't that?
Well, for one thing, Your Honor, the state Supreme Court in Illinois has determined that that is not. In order to get parole, he has to agree that he's going to consent to be searched, at least under certain circumstances. But that's not the same thing as saying that it's. It's not the same thing as saying that he gives advance consent for any search in the future.
I don't understand. It's a condition. You don't get. If you want to be paroled, you have to consent to a search of your person, property, or residence. Right?
Well, you have to consent to certain searches. I think under.
Consent to what? I can't hear you.
I'm not sure why that is, Judge. To certain searches, or searches under certain circumstances. In Sampson, the court found that there were really no conditions. You could be searched. There was no need for probable cause or any type of individualized suspicion. There was no need for a warrant. It could be by a peace officer, you know, any police officer or a parole officer, and it could be at any time of day or night.
Right.
A number of courts that we cite in our brief, the Second Circuit, the Sixth Circuit, have found that even after Sampson, that a consent to search.
Well, it would depend on the state law, wouldn't it?
It depends on state law, but it also requires a certain degree of clarity in state law. In Sampson, the court said...
Well, this is perfectly clear. I don't see what the problem is here.
To say that you consent to a search generally?
A search, yeah.
No, I think other courts have found that would suggest to somebody that there still needs to be some degree of suspicion.
Well, why? There's nothing in there about that.
Well, there's nothing in there. And in Sampson, they found that something was in there, and that's what was so important to the Sampson court. It was unequivocally and unambiguously expressed to the defendant, who was unambiguously aware of it. And the court in Sampson seemed to find it very important that it was specifically stated that the search could be any time of day or night, with or without a search warrant, with or without cause, by a parole officer or any police officer. The Illinois statute, the Illinois parole condition, contains none of those things. And the Supreme Court in Sampson, even the majority, seemed to recognize that this would place California in a minority of jurisdictions in allowing a search along these lines. Illinois is not in that minority of jurisdictions. It's more in the norm of jurisdictions where they seem to say, and the dissent in Sampson indicates that this would really only be California and possibly one or two other jurisdictions. This was a very vague and general condition that a person might rightly think, well, that would apply to my parole officer. It would apply to when I have meetings with my parole officers, not to make me, a sitting duck for any cop, anytime, anywhere. So for those reasons, we would ask that the judgment below be reversed. Thank you, Your Honors.
Well, wait, before you sit down, I don't understand how you can get around Rule 11A. Right?
On the plea?
Yeah.
Well, how I get around Rule 11A is that it's not jurisdictional, and where there are circumstances to suggest that, in fact, there was a reservation, that this court will recognize the reservation.
What's the reservation?
The reservation is that at the sentencing, Mr. Young raised a question. Mr. Young's assistant federal defender stated to the court, Judge, he explains to the judge that he's also appealing from the suppression hearing, and then says to the judge, quote, I know you know that too. He's indicating to the district court, you're aware of this, Your Honor. The district court responds, right.
I don't understand. The judge may have forgotten, what was in the plea and may have assumed from what the lawyer said that there was a reservation. But there is none.
Well, there's
no
written
reservation,
plea.
You can't appeal.
There's no written plea. You've got a defendant who's stating that there was one. Give that what you will. You've got a defendant's lawyer who's stating that there was one.
It says reserve in writing. There's no reservation in writing.
I understand that, Judge, but I also
understand. It's a flat violation of Rule 11A to be appealing that. Right?
No, because there are a number of cases where this court has entertained appeals where it was not.
Cases. I mean, the government can, of course, consent to an appeal, right? But
well, and they may have there. The government stood silent when everybody in the room said, oh, yes, we're appealing this as well.
I don't understand that.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. Cox?
Good morning, Your Honors. Richard Cox on behalf of the United States. If I first could just address the waiver issue. There was no written plea agreement. It was an open plea. The change of plea proceeding shows no discussion whatsoever by any of the parties about reserving any issue for future appeal. Unfortunately, at the sentencing, many months later, the magistrate takes the pleas in our courthouse and the district judge does the sentencing. So, unfortunately, the district court judge at sentencing, after Mr. Young's attorney mentioned that he also had some interest in appealing his suppression issue, said you can appeal that too, which was certainly not correct because he had waived that by not reserving in writing at the time of his guilty plea, which, of course, all non-jurisdictional issues are waived by your guilty plea. So what happens many months later?
Speak up? Why didn't the government speak up when everybody's saying, we'll do this, and the judge is saying, sure, I remember this?
The only thing I can say, Your Honor, is I obviously was asleep. I'm not offering that as an excuse. I did not correct the district judge's misstatement at that time, and that's my fault. But that doesn't confer the ability to appeal for something that should have been done many months before. That's the government's position. I'm not looking to for you to excuse or to do anything with my failure to challenge.
But the rule, we all have bad days. But the rule is written on perhaps the slight misapprehension that all pleas are accompanied by a written agreement. And of course, as you well know, there's a subset of pleas that aren't. You know, people. In fact, I think personally, it may be because the government has gotten very pushy about appeal waivers in general, and some people figure, well, why don't I just do an open plea or a blind plea or whatever you want to call it and take my chances. And it's difficult to find room for these kinds of reservations when somebody has chosen to do an open plea, although I don't see anything in the language of the rule that says there's a public policy against a comparable reservation.
I can't speak for districts other than my own, but it's not unusual that a defendant wants to plead without a plea agreement with regard to whatever the possible sentence might be or those kinds of issues, but we will have a specific reservation of right to appeal a specified issue, like a motion to suppress that had been previously denied or some other motion.
And so you'll file that after the oral plea?
We do that at the time of the plea. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, usually there's discussions that have gone on. The defendant says, I don't want any agreements with regard to sentencing. I don't want, for instance, oftentimes it's a cooperation agreement. The mm-hmm. defendant says, I don't want to cooperate. But we had a suppression hearing and I lost it. I'd like to appeal that. And rather than, of course, force the person to trial just to preserve that issue, then we'll execute a document called a reservation of right to appeal. And so, again, I don't know how commonplace that is other places.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But we would definitely do that. But that would have been part of the negotiation. That's why I'm saying at the time of the change of plea, there would have been some discussion among the parties had anybody had any thought that there was going to be a reservation of the right to appeal the denial of the motion to suppress.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like me to discuss the merits? Or?
What about this reading of Sampson? Is it as narrow as your opponent suggests?
Well, we don't think so, Your Honor, but of course we didn't even address Sampson because I don't think the district court's ruling was based on Sampson at all. To some extent, Sampson is a red herring. In this case, the judge made it real clear that his finding was based on probable cause to arrest Mr. Young, not only for the traffic offense that was committed, but also his flight and then the recovery of the marijuana from him. And then that was a search incident to the arrest. So there's discussion about Sampson, but the district court judge clearly finds that the search did not result from any status of Mr. Young's being on parole, but was based on his arrest on probable cause. If the court has no further questions, then I give back the balance of my time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Cox. Mr. Tanner, do you have anything further?
Judge, thank you. On that final point, on the, what the basis for the arrest was, from an AUSA who was not at all asleep, stood in front of the district court and he said, Judge, I'm not going to hang my hat on that search incident to arrest. I am not going to hang my hat on that because we all know, you heard from Detective Rosenberry, he searched because he found out the defendant was on parole. That was the basis for the search, and that's why Sampson comes into play here. I appreciate your time. Thank you, Judge.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And you were appointed, were you not, Mr. Tanner? Well, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client, and we thank Mr. Cox as well. And the court will be in recess until...